Calling the meeting to order. Good morning and welcome to the July 18th, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for being here today and participating and remind you to silence any electronic devices. That reminds me, I need to check mine. For those attending electronically, please mute your screens. Today's meeting is a study and business session with the study session starting this morning at 10 a.m. and the afternoon business session starting at 1. Today's agenda will be fairly short, so we may be moving things rapidly, and this afternoon might be pretty short. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions after each item presented. If you wish to provide additional comment or ask additional questions related to matters not on the agenda, time will be provided for that this afternoon. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand either physically or electronically, signaling that you wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have three commissioners present, which I'm going to talk about in a minute is a little problematic for us with our agenda, and I'll come back to the agenda in a few minutes. But today we have Manager Kirk Hudson. Eric is not here today, is that correct?
He's online. Yep.
Hello, Eric. Rebecca Newman, Administrative Assistant. At this time, please join Charles Von Reese in leading the Pledge of Allegiance and Safety Minute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning, commissioners.
Morning, Charles.
I'm going to be talking about lightning safety. 10% of people that come in contact with lightning die. 70% of survivors have lifelong debilitating injuries. I want to, first of all, thank Dave Parkhill for suggesting this as a topic, because as I learned about it, I learned that there's a big gap between my instincts when it comes to lightning and best practices. So I have two examples of what I did this year during lightning storms and what I have now learned are better practices, and hopefully this will help some other people that maybe need a refresher on lightning safety. So we've had some great lightning storms around here. If you're like me, you really enjoy watching a lightning storm. Earlier this year, we had one that was accompanied by heavy rainfall. I chose to enjoy it from my back patio, which was covered. I thought, oh well, I'm sheltered. I have a roof over my head. That is not the case. If you're not inside a building, and particularly a building with plumbing and electricity, with the windows closed, the doors closed, you're not actually sheltered. A second problem for what I was doing there is I was on concrete. Concrete is, you should stay away from concrete floors or concrete walls. The rebar or wires mesh through the concrete can conduct electricity. The second example that I'm going to give is fishing in the mountains. So interestingly, a lot of July is the most common month for lightning injuries, and Saturday afternoons also. So Saturday afternoon, I was up fishing in the mountains with a friend, and we heard a distant rumble. My friend from the Midwest, his first instinct was pack up our stuff and head straight back to the car, which is what we did. But I have to admit, I thought, well, that's a little bit rash. Where, you know, the lightning's a ways away. It might not even come our direction. Well, best practice, if if it roars, get indoors. And particularly because we were, you know, I want to get in a couple more casts, but we're on a water body. So if you are outdoors, actually the first thing to do if you're going to be outdoors is check the weather. And you can see whether there's a chance of lightning. If there is a chance of lightning, maybe stay indoors that day, maybe not go up to the mountains and fish. But if you are stuck outdoors, get away from water immediately, get to lower elevation, get to shelter if you can. If you're up in the mountains, that's a little bit difficult, but car is the best shelter you could hope for. And luckily we had a car not too far away that time. The last tip for being outdoors is to stay away from it. Don't use as shelter cliffs or rocky outcroppings, because the electricity can actually travel through those, through the rocks. So you want to avoid the rocks. And if you are with a companion outdoors, try to stay at least 20 feet apart so that you don't both get struck by the same lightning strike. And if someone is unfortunate in your party to get injured and they're non-responsive, CPR is the most likely first aid that's going to be needed for that person. So that's my safety minute. I hope that was a good refresher for everybody.
Thank you, Charles. That was great for everybody. Boy, that brings back memories from me as a child Boy Scout. You know, we take our kids up into the mountains, and I've had two experiences with lightning. One, a tree from here to the door got hit. Our hair stood up, and the thing exploded, and pieces. It was amazing no one was hurt. And then another time it hit the outhouse, bounced off, hit another kid, and then went into the ground. And they had to take both those kids to the hospital. But it's pretty terrifying. So that you just brought, you know, 50 years ago memories back for me. So great message. Thank you, Charles.
Yeah, if I could chime in, Charles, you're very timely. Just last week I read a report of a boat with four people on it being struck by lightning in the middle of a lake, and the boat sank. So you're right. Get off the water. Good reminder, good safety moment.
Very timely.
Yeah.
Thanks, Charles.
All right, commissioners. We have an agenda in front of us, and one change I would like to make on the agenda today is we have two commissioners absent today, and we have the Fifth Street project discussion on the agenda today, and because this is an important issue, I would like to postpone that agenda item for 2 weeks until we have a full commission present. I know I have some folks here today that may have been planning on commenting, and I think it might be appropriate if you're here today, we could maybe leave this enough on the agenda where you could comment and we could get that information from you. But I would like to postpone this for 2 weeks until we have everyone here. Also, staff's recommending moving resolutions 11, 12, and 13 to the consent agenda. Additionally, for the public's information, items on the consent agenda are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commission member. So, commissioners, do I hear any request or additions or changes to the agenda?
Mr. President, I would agree with moving item resolutions 11, 12, and 13 to consent.
Okay. All right. I don't see any.
If that needs a second, I'll be happy to do that.
No, it doesn't. But thanks, Dennis.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to postpone item number 6, Fifth Street Development, and we will move 11, 12, and 13 to the consent agenda. So, Kirk, at this time, I'm not hearing any other changes to the agenda. Kirk, we'll talk. I'll turn this over for the cycle of personal ownership recognition.
Great, thank you. At this time, I'd like to call Sean Harrington up, and it's my pleasure to recognize Sean as June's Cycle of Personal Ownership Award winner. And so Sean hasn't been with the district for very long. In fact, I think you're just 1 year anniversary.
Yep.
Yeah.
Last week.
So Sean is making a significant impact in a short period of time with us. And so it's just an honor to recognize him today and share what he got recognized for. Sean was recognized for displaying our operational excellence value by automating a critical financial reporting process. This is a process that is quite manually labor intensive and involves copying, pasting multiple files, converting information to text, ensuring data ranges are correct, and then creating 44 separate files. Well, with Sean's abilities, he quickly recognized that there was a way to automate some of this process and not only reduce the amount of time staff is involved, but also reduce the amount of opportunities there are for errors to be made in a very labor-intensive process such as this one. So he used one of the tools we had available here to write a script to do that. And we're just excited that he's got the skill set to help us out here in a big way. And Sean, just really appreciate you seeing this opportunity and being able to do something to make it better for everyone. So congratulations and appreciate the impact you're making in such a short period of time here.
Thank you. Yeah, glad I was able to help out and be able to write some code rather than copy and paste a lot, many, many times.
So Sean is in our business intelligence and data analytics group in the finance area.
Great. Great. Thank you.
Good work, Sean. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Keep those great ideas coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I have the opportunity.
Appreciate you being here and your hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Glad to be here. Thank you so much for your time.
All right.
Thanks, Sean.
Okay, I think I'm going to, because of the changes in the agenda and not to have, because of that change with anybody that was here for the Fifth Street redevelopment, I think I'm just going to open it up for public comment. If there was somebody that had something to add about Fifth Street, I'm going to go ahead and take those comments so that you don't have to sit through our meeting very long. So is there anybody that had anything that they would like to share? I apologize for the change. And we'll be back in a couple weeks to continue our discussion on that. Is there anybody that would like to speak?
Do you have any comments?
No. Okay. Thanks for being here. Sorry for the change.
Thank you.
Okay, commissioners, let's talk about the quarterly board balance scorecard status update for our audience. This is an accountability document that we use as commissioners to track our responsibilities to our stakeholders, our financial oversight, meeting attendance throughout the state and region. And this is a public document. Anybody could get a hold of that and ask for it. And this shows us when we're not meeting our target goals and shows us when we are meeting our goals. And we break this down by a commissioner. Not because that commissioner is responsible for that one area, but they agree to cover that in our accountability reporting. So because Ann's not here today, I'll just walk through this today. We didn't meet our target for attending tri-commission meetings. Little short, close, but didn't quite meet that one. Gary, do you want to take the next one?
I certainly will. You bet. So, actually, the next one is G3, Responsible Board Representation.
F1.
So it's all in green. We're in
good. Oh, yeah, we're all green. So the next red would be G3.
Okay. So let's just quickly walk through it. So maintaining strong financial stewardship, we're green there. Dennis is reporting. Dennis, anything you want to say there? We're all green there. That's on...
I was muted. Yeah, we're staying on track so far.
Okay.
Arena.
Thank you. Let's see, Randy, everything is good there. He's not here, so we'll just continue on. The area under our regional and national association responsibilities, we are... For NWPPA organization, we're just slightly missing the target there of attendance, and we'll be looking at that. Again, COVID has had some impact on us on meeting our both how they run their meetings, and we haven't been traveling as much to those, so we'll continue to work on that one. And we've evaluated our governance policies as commissioners with our attorney. Those are all up to date. And so anyway, we're in good shape. Got a couple things to work on, but other than that, I think we're in good shape. Anything, commissioners, anything else you want to say on that? Okay.
Yeah.
Moving on. Item number 5, Climate Commitment Act, Cost Burden Analysis. Kirk, I'll turn this back over to you.
Thank you. As Mike Bradshaw comes up, this is actually a new requirement for us under the Climate Commitment Act, and Mike's going to share what this is all about, and we'll also be coming back to the board probably sometime in August to look at the Cap and Invest cost burden forecast. So Mike's going to introduce the Climate Commitment Act and the requirement for us, and no action is required today.
Great. Thanks, Kirk. Good morning, commissioners. Mike Bradshaw, Energy Planning and Trading, Director of Energy Structuring and Trading. And just want to talk a little bit about the Climate Commitment Act. It's basically Washington's Cap and Invest program, and more specifically about adopting a Cap and Invest cost burden forecast. So why we're here today, as Kirk mentioned, no action is required today. We'll be coming back next month to ask for adoption of a supply load resource forecast. The purpose of today is to provide context on the CCA and how it provides electric utilities to receive no-cost allowances. Oh, you got it? Okay. All right, CCA overview. So as I mentioned, it establishes Washington's Cap and Invest program, the second state to enact a carbon policy as a cap and trade behind California. It regulates greenhouse gas emissions from both in-state electricity generation as well as electricity imported into the state of Washington. And this program begins January 1st, 2023, so coming up quickly. It covers electricity, transportation, natural gas, and energy intensive trade units, such as like manufacturing companies. It sets a cap of overall emissions, and then that cap gets reduced over time, all the way through 2050. What an allowance is, it allows an owner to emit up to 1 ton of carbon. And again, those are reduced over time. So they're slowly pulling the allowances out of the market. Electric utilities are able to receive no-cost allowances through 2044 to mitigate what is called the cost burden, the cost from a utility to be under this program. So what is a cost burden? And I think one question might be, with Chelan having all hydro and emission-free, sets us up in a pretty good spot. But determining or depending on how the rules are written, we may have a cost burden. And so the cost burden is the definition there on the right. It means impact to the rates or charges of the customers. The Department of Ecology must allocate no-cost allowances to customer-owned utilities consistent with utility-approved supply-demand forecasts and utilities' cost burdens.
So, Mike, this is Dennis.
Yeah.
Could you define for me no-cost allowances?
Yeah, so allowances will be the instruments that are surrendered when carbon is emitted. And so a no-cost essentially is there's no price, and they're handed out freely to utilities so that they are not burdened by being under this program.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and part of the reason for the no-cost handout to electric utilities is because of the passage of CETA, the Clean Energy Transformation Act, that already charts a pathway towards clean energy, and this was recognized as kind of a double legislation to get to that clean energy supply. Sure. So we bucketed cost burden kind of into three buckets. One is direct, indirect, and administrative. So as I mentioned, Chelan has hydro and a small share of wind, all non-emitting. But depending on what Bonneville Power Administration chooses, they have the option to either comply with the program or not to comply with the program. And if they choose not to, which is what they have indicated for 2023 at least, then the obligation, if you purchase from Bonneville or if you are if you transact with Bonneville in the wholesale market, the obligation rolls downhill to the purchaser. And so as Chelan, we sell often, but we also buy energy too. And so if we were to purchase from Bonneville or be next to them in the wholesale market, we would have a carbon obligation and would need to surrender an allowance. Indirectly, because carbon will now be in the energy price itself, in the energy price formation, wholesale purchases will be more expensive. And so there's a cost to that. And then the third bucket, the administrative, that will be just to be part of the program and to track and to monitor and to receive allowances. It'll be set up in staff time to participate in that.
So there's going to be a cost to that regardless, just tracking that. That's going to add. Oh. The question was, at least under the administrative part, there is going to be definitely time, staff time to track, and there is a cost to this.
Right. Staff time historically, year to date, last year too. But yeah, going forward, setting up systems, mm-hmm. having a new portfolio of allowances, retiring allowances potentially, all that is covered as under the administrative bucket and is allowed to be considered in the cost burden calculation.
Thank you.
So continuation of district cost burden. We have existing district adopted supply and demand forecast, like the the IRP and our Clean Energy Implementation Plan, or the CEIP. But those don't fully capture the direct and indirect costs as discussed on the previous slide. So we're working with other Washington utilities to develop a template that reflects the individual utility's cost burden. And as part of the input into that template will be the supply and demand forecast.
So I have a question back on the previous slide. This has to do with our wholesale power sales to Avista and others. Will we be downstreaming our cost on that as well, just as Bonneville will? Or do we have that ability?
So those slice purchasers, I did purchase carbon-free energy. And so we'll be transferring. So Chelan, sorry, maybe I don't fully understand the question.
So in terms of the power sales we have, and obviously they're carbon free, but there still must be a capturing mechanism to capture that. So for reporting purposes, who's going to pay for that? Are we going to downstream those costs?
I see. So the cost of production and that I'll have to come back with an answer for that.
Okay. All right.
That's a good question.
I see a lot of things rolling downhill here, and I just want to find out where it's going to stop.
Okay. Continuing, so as I mentioned, we're working with other utilities to create a simplified spreadsheet that will capture the cost burden calculation for each utility in an effort to provide Department of Ecology, who does have the ultimate say in what the cost burden is for each utility, but presenting a template that's consistent across the board and that looks somewhat simple to understand given the time frame that they're under and the push to get this program started by January 1st. So our proposed next steps is once that template is finalized, which we're very close there, we will adopt our own supply demand forecast based on that template. We're targeting to come back here on August 15th to share that supply demand forecast and look for approval. We will submit that to the Department of Ecology before October 1st, and that is when they will complete their rulemaking. So rulemaking is ongoing. So previously to them finalizing the rulemaking, have this in front of them so they can see a consistent way to look at cost burden calculation. But again, the Department of Ecology does have the ultimate say on what the cost burden looks like for utility. So depending on what they come back to, we may need to revise that forecast or pursue a different approach. And that is an update on the CCA and cost burden.
Thank you. You're right. It is approaching rapidly.
Which kind of brings up a question for me. When is our next workshop scheduled? This might be...
We don't have a date on the calendar for that yet.
A good agenda item for our workshop for more learning for me as a commissioner, the impacts of this. And I can see as that rolls down, there's decisions that are going to be made. And I've got some learning to do there, so... Rebecca, if you wouldn't mind just jotting that down as a possible future workshop item.
Yeah, and you can see how, as Mike talked about, Bonneville has an option to participate or not, and you can see how many organizations will be affected by that decision across the Northwest. Very significant.
Hi, this is Sean Smith, Managing Director of Energy Resources. We also have a carbon consultant. So she might be, she's offered to come to the board, and that might be a good agenda item during the workshop. She's very good at explaining these types of things and educating.
Great.
So we could ask her to come to that if she's available.
Yeah
it is. I think, one of the things we're recognizing is there's a lot of pieces to these different legislation in the Clean Energy Transformation Act and the CCA that Mike's sharing today, both have requirements but different purposes, and they also come together at some point as well in terms of just trying to reduce the amount of carbon in the system in Washington State. And so both new requirements that have a lot of rulemaking that's in progress and trying to figure out exactly what these things are going to mean for Chelan PUD. So a lot of work going on there.
Okay. And Commissioner Arsenault, was one of your questions, can we opt out like BPA? Was that one of your questions?
I think it was the question of
administrative.
In terms of, describing that people, if Bonneville doesn't take that requirement on, then they pass it down. And then, well, how about us on the selling end? Is that similar? Do we pass that on down, or do we take that, take care of that as we sell our energy?
Right. One of the issues, so the BPA is a federal agency and has that opt-out option as being part regulated within the state. We don't have that option. We've got to comply. The question, though, will be about administrative expenses, if we can put that in those allowances, which we can track that down.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Mike, thank you very much. John, thank you.
Thank you.
That's a big job, Mike. You got a lot of work.
Big program.
Okay. Anything else on that? All right. Let's move on to item number 7, Confluence Parkway. Due diligence, Michelle Smith.
Well, good morning, Commissioners. Michelle Smith, Director of Licensing. And I was hoping to just give you a 5-minute quick update, but welcome any questions that you might have. And as always, feel free to contact me later with questions, and I'll always follow up in the next board meeting with responses. So it's funny, I'm looking at like the exact opposite faces today as the last meeting, and then with Dennis on the phone, Commissioner Bolts on the phone. So, but I meant today to just give you a, oops, Rebecca, what? And just give you a next steps look. At the last meeting on July 5th, we had our noise expert here to give us the results of that study. I'm hoping you had a chance to look at that, but very, very helpful in giving us some more information, really confirming, I think, the results of the city's noise analysis, but confirmed for us and really helped us understand better, I think, some of the noise sources, the impacts, and really, you know, looking more fully at the types of mitigation that we should be expecting and talking with the city about. So I think that effort and that due diligence was well worth the time that we spent to do it. We did have one follow-up item that we're still waiting for. We've been working with the city on this, but our noise expert recommended that we at least ask the question about a 6-foot noise wall at the southern pinch point. We're trying to figure out with the city and if that was already analyzed in that cost, you know, when they did the cost analysis of that, whether or not they did an estimate for a 6-foot wall. And so the city thinks that they did. They're going back to look through their engineering records. And they're also looking at giving us a better schematic, if you will, of the entire berm wall configuration along that bench. Right now, we've been a little bit, we're having a hard time following where there's a berm, where there's a wall, where there's a berm and a wall. And right. So we felt it was probably fair to ask if we could see a better schematic just to give us a little more confidence in what we're accepting in terms of the mitigation there. So I expect to have that in the next week or so, and we'll either send that out or bring that to the next meeting so that we have that graphic with us in that response. Another element that I wanted to let you know, we brought this up in the last meeting as well, is we are, you know, we've been working with the city during their environmental assessment for several months. They are planning to wrap that up this year, so they're hoping to finish their environmental assessment and the Section 4F evaluation. We are cooperating with that, as are the tribes and the other agencies and the federal agencies on the ESA issues. There are a lot of, I guess we're calling them terms, but there's a lot of mitigation and discussions that have gone on between the PUD. There's things that we're still working on with the city, and the utilities, right, is a big one. Our wells and how they're going to have to find us another source of water, because they're proposing to put the parkway over our current wells for the park. So they have to find us wells, new wells, and new water. and move those. So there's a lot of details that may not show up in the environmental assessment or the 4F document that we want to make sure are captured. So we have been pulling those things together. We're calling it a term sheet, but it's kind of the, all the areas of agreement and all the things that we feel are contingencies that we feel need to be, we need to provide to the board to give us the confidence for you to say, yes, we're okay with this at the end of the day land exchange, right, that we're working mm-hmm. towards. So we hope to maybe bring you a draft of that in August so you can start reviewing that and feeling comfortable with that. We're working on it internally right now, and then we'll be working back and forth with the city eventually. So I wanted to let you know that. I think right. that will culminate for a lot of us all these discussions and all these different resource areas that we've been talking about, not just noise, but everything else too. We're also working to work a little bit harder on understanding what they're doing on the bridge for noise mitigation and also for safety. And the aesthetic, I think, component was one other element that we've brought up. So we haven't forgotten about that. We're still working with them on some of those things, and we'll bring those back to you once we learn more. And then we heard last meeting that it's really important to keep our wildlife experts involved. So Vaughn Pope, for example, making sure that as we're continuing to work on this, that he's included in discussions, and he has been. But I just wanted to confirm that we heard that, and we'll continue to make sure that our wildlife experts are involved as we continue the environmental analyses. We also wanted to let you know that we are working with the city. They have given us the ability to kind of start working on the Category A justification. So we have the pen right now. We're writing a draft. We'll give that back to the city and their consultants, and they're going to finish that up, and then they submit that to Federal Highway, and it's Federal Highway Administration that makes the final determination on that Category A. But I wanted to let you know as a follow-up on that issue, we still feel it's important to keep that classified as the Inner Harran area as a quiet, serene area to preserve it that way, and we feel it's justified to keep it as a Category A, so that's going to be our proposal, and we hope that Federal Highway will accept that as well. And then I'm going to go to the next slide. Just a reminder that this is the city's schedule. So they're hoping to finish the environmental assessment and the 4F evaluation later this year. They will put that out for formal public comment. That's when the PUD would be providing our, we keep calling it the letter of concurrence, but it's actually just our comments on those two documents. So the hope is that they're going to have that by the end of the year. We don't exactly know when that will happen yet, but this is, you know, their estimated time frame. They will also have a public open house with that public comment period. So as soon as we learn more with any dates associated with that, we'll let you know ahead of time. And then, as you know, they're hoping to get 30% design done also by the end of the year. They're roughly around 10, 15, 20% design right now. They're still working with their federal agencies on the ESA consultations and the work there. So the federal fish agencies have to issue a biological opinion on this project. It's also part of this NEPA process. That needs to be completed at the same time that the EA and the 4F, all of that needs to go to Federal Highway before the NEPA is complete. So even if we get the EA and the 4F, our comments in and that comment period ends, we're still waiting for the biological opinion from the federal agencies, and we don't know how long that will take. We're also still, I say we, but it's actually the city will be waiting for their Section 106 consultation to also be completed with the tribes. So those two pieces are also part of this NEPA process that the city needs to complete. So it's just important to remember that just because the EA and the 4F documents are complete, those other two elements are very critical to the completion of their NEPA process. And then Federal Highway will make the final decision on the entire project. Then they'll, if they get everything completed to Federal Highway, Federal Highway accepts the project, concludes the NEPA process, then they will go from 30% design to 100% design. So we can expect more details to kind of be ironed out at that time to get to 100% design. And once they get 100% design and all of their permits, so now they're going to need their water, you know, to do the bridge, for example, to construct that bridge, they are going to need to get all of their water quality permits, their HPA permits, their state permits, for example. And that's about the time that they would need to get the FERC assurance that we have the land, FERC has approved the land exchange, and they'll finish up all their permitting, get their final design completed, and then at that point they will hopefully get all of their final construction funding obligations met, and then they hope to begin construction around 2025-2026. So it's a very broad glimpse of the schedule, and it could change. We know how projects can change, but that's, I think, what their hope is right now for a schedule.
Michelle, you're juggling a lot of things right now with this project, so thank you
for all that. We all are juggling all of the things, and I want to just mention that the city has been very, very helpful in getting every question we've asked for. You know, they've brought back information. They've been very helpful in helping our engineers and our folks have the information they need to help make these decisions internally so that we can bring back the information to you. So it's been a real cooperation with the city. We appreciated their help on this. That's good.
Gary?
I have actually a couple of questions. One is, have you heard anything about how the tribes are reacting to this?
So The only meeting I've been involved with was back in February. We had asked for some more due diligence, phone conversations with all of the agencies and the tribes to let them know of our FERC responsibilities, but also to give them an update on where the project, the Confluence Parkway project, was. So we coordinated with the city. We did have a meeting with the Yakima tribes and the Colville tribes. They all appreciated the information and basically said we look forward to continuing to work through the Section 106 process. Okay. So that's all I know at this point.
So the second question is on water. I know that whenever you deal with water, you're talking water rights, there's always issues. Will there be any, if I understand it, and I probably don't, so I'm going to rely on you to for clarification. But since we already have existing wells, if all we're doing is drilling another well and capping the old ones, are there any water rights issues, anything that possibly ecology could give us a hard time on?
That's really a great question to ask. There shouldn't be any changes in our water rights. Our water rights are the water rights, and we will have to do a change of location on those water rights, but the water right amounts should transfer. I mean, there's no change there. So we will have to talk to ecology. We will have to do a change of the location of where that water is coming from. But the water rights won't be changed. So we're not going to, you know, be at risk for losing our water rights, for example.
Great. Thanks. Yeah.
Dennis, do you have any questions?
I'm good right now. Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis. Well, Michelle, I really appreciate all the work that you were putting into this, and the work of the noise engineer was really helpful to me to further my confidence, answer our questions, give us ideas on mitigation, and so I'm feeling really good about that and appreciate that work it's been really valuable to work with that consultant as we move forward with our mitigation concerns and questions, and that's been very helpful. So thank you very much for your work on that.
You're welcome.
Okay. Do we have any other questions or concerns, comments from the public? Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks, Michelle.
You're welcome. Okay. This time, I'm going to open it up for any public comment. Anything that was not on the agenda, is there anybody that would like to address the commission this morning? Okay. Okay, so Kirk, I think we should probably move on with consent agenda and resolutions. And are we okay with any?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Direction? I'm not sure if we have one of our resolution presenters, Gary Rice. So maybe we ought to start with manager items, if that'd be okay, and then circle back.
Sure.
Buy us a little bit of time here. Okay. And I do see we have the people here for manager items, so I'd like to call up Ron Gibbs. Ron's going to give us an update on our insurance renewals.
Ron Gibbs, Insurance and Claims Manager. Good morning, Commissioners. As Kirk mentioned, this is the follow-up to the June 20th presentation to share the final insurance premiums that we negotiated following the July 1st insurance renewal. And in that presentation in June, I requested $5 million authority, and that was due to some challenges that we were seeing with the wildfire liability risk. And since that time, we continued to negotiate with insurance companies. And fortunately, we were able to overcome those challenges this year and negotiated premiums in line with our insurance budget for the wildfire risk. And then on the property insurance side, the negotiations resulted in us paying the same rate per $1 million in property value that we did in 2021. Hmm. Now, of course, unfortunately, we did have a lot of inflation over the last year, and we had the new property valuation at Rocky Reach. So our premiums went up in line with the property value increases that we saw. So we did still see some premium increase there. But the final insurance premiums for all policies totaled $4.6 million, which was just under the June 20th estimate. And I did notice, unfortunately, this morning a math calculation error. And so the overall increase is 25%, not 23.4% that you have on your sheet. So my apologies for that. But I think it's fair to say that, like all Western utilities, Chelina's navigating through some difficult insurance market conditions. And next year, we do expect wildfire liability to continue to be a challenge to cover. And, of course, it highlights the importance of the mitigation efforts that we're making. And I think those are going to be essential to securing wildfire coverage going forward as well. And then we anticipate that the property insurance premiums will also continue to be affected by inflation. So it'll be interesting to see if the world economic conditions change, what impact that could have on insurance markets. A lot of times that does have an impact and could make things, could soften insurance markets. We sure hope to see some relief in terms of the premium increases that we've been seeing the last few years. And that really is the quick update I had for you today. Are there any questions?
I have one. Ron, would you negotiate my personal insurance?
We'll talk after that.
Thank you. Great job.
No, thank you very much.
Dennis, any questions?
No, I'm good. It's
okay.
Well, a little sticker shock, into the increase. It's my hope that we're essentially budgeting with the kind of the same level of anticipated increase for next year and just be, you know, budget-wise prepared for what's probably inevitably coming our way because it's not going to go down.
No, absolutely. It's a team effort to put together the budgets in line with our insurance brokers and internal staff and getting out our crystal ball to see what the insurance markets could do. But we're glad that this year we could deliver a result that was on target in terms of the budget and hope to do the same next year.
Great.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
Thanks, Ron. Good work. All right, next we have John Stoll's going to give us a recap. We have had a number of customer outages over a week ago up in the between Squilchuck and Mission Ridge area, and John's going to share what we know.
Morning, Commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. As Kirk has mentioned, it was, I think, around the 6th or 7th of July, we up in the Forest Ridge, Mission Ridge area, we started to see some outages. they were a bit of a head scratcher to the stamp from the perspective that it was just tough to really isolate it and find out what happened. We have a protection device. It's called a reclosure, and it sits down there about at the end of the road where it splits into Mission Ridge and Squilchuck State Park. That the reclosure would operate, and then that would take about 130 customers out of power until they could patrol and find out what was going on, and then re-energize. So I know it was frustrating for those customers up there to experience that. I think there were four or five of those outages that happened over about a four-day period. What we had to do, because the reclosure was operating, we normally get a lot of data out of it, but it wasn't giving us the data we needed. So it turned into more of just a bit of a hide and seek to just put down fault indicators to try and narrow where this outage might be. Because what usually happens is there's other protection or other devices that isolate and point out what the issue was. But because of the how the reclosure was acting, we couldn't get that until we narrowed it down. So the good news was finally we did pinpoint it to what we thought was a transformer, a large three-phase transformer up at the very top of the ridge that served some equipment, some radio towers. So crews went up there and they had to use a specialized piece of equipment to actually kind of probe that transformer and identify where the fault was, and sure enough it was there. So they were able to haul up another transformer and take care of the situation. We also took down the reclosure, took it into the shop to just go through it, test it, re-upload the software, and do what we need to do. So happy to answer any questions if there are any.
If I can comment, I just want to say you guys did a great job. That everyone involved, all staff involved, did a spectacular job. It became very apparent to me as I was getting phone calls, as they're all my neighbors, asking what's going on, that they were concerned, but also they were impressed. They were impressed by the show of force that the PUD threw at this problem. There were lots of trucks. I don't know how many line crews you had up there, but there were at least a half a dozen or more vehicles that were PUD vehicles with the logo on the side. And I can't tell you how many comments I got from neighbors saying, man, they must be doing this because you live here. And it's like, no, this is what they do everywhere that there's an outage. And that was very impressive. So it reaffirmed that, you know, that the PUD really does great work and take great care of their customer owners. A large number of Forest Ridge is now owned mostly by second homes, people out of Seattle, and they're not used to this kind of service. So they were really impressed when they saw all the effort and the men and women that were thrown at this. So great job. It's inconvenient, but I've lived there 27 years. This is the first time I've ever had a problem like that. And so, you know, considering we're 9 miles out of town, deep in a forest, we're really lucky that we don't have more outages, and that I think the district did a great job. And so did the residents that I spoke to. They were very impressed by the effort. So thank goodness it wasn't winter. If you had to go up to the top of 2 and do that in the winter, that would really be grueling.
Years ago, I think they used to have to do that quite a bit.
No.
But we went through and recabled it. Oh, Kirk, you remember it was like 2005.
Yeah, it was right around there.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I went up on Monday when they were testing that transformer. You know, after dealing with it over the weekend, I was just curious to get up there and get eyes on it. And it was just really fascinating driving up the ski area in the middle of summer.
Yeah.
It took a while.
Yeah. So. I think it was, anyway, perfect. I think it was a great job. I think you actually got a lot of mileage. I think the district got a lot of mileage out of all the effort. You know, it was very, very noticed.
Thank you. So,
good job.
John, thank you for the update.
Yeah, John, just a comment similar to one that I emailed to you. Just, you know, kind of watching this thing from afar. Diligence, you know, the dedication, you know, the determination, just dogged determination by everyone from your office through the organization that was involved in it was really impressive. Just we weren't going to let this thing go. And that determination was really appreciated because that's the heart and soul of customer service, and can't say enough for everybody involved, and thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Dennis. I know we all feel the pressure when, you know, nobody wants to see customers out of service, so everybody rallies, and it's what we do.
Please accept our appreciation from the commission to staff about all their hard work and dedication to get that result. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. Last item, I was just going to update the board on, I know you've all heard a lot about mosquitoes in the Rand and Walla Walla Point park area, and we are proceeding with the proposed treatment, and it looks like the treatment will occur on Wednesday, this Wednesday. So just wanted to follow up, make sure everyone was aware that that's going forward.
Yeah, it's always interesting to the phone calls you get. And yep. Mosquitoes, definitely one of those calls.
Yeah. And that's all.
Subjects of calls.
That's all I have for manager items.
Very good.
I think we can proceed back accordingly with the consent agenda.
Okay. So, commissioners, we have a consent agenda that includes resolutions 11, 12, and 13. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept a consent agenda with as presented with the additions of 11, 12, and 13.
And I'll second that.
Although any discussion on that? All those in favor of approving the consent agenda signal by saying aye.
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 Motion passes. There were no nays. Thank you. So we're on to, are we ready for 14?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Resolution, agenda item number 14 is a resolution authorizing amendment number 1 to service agreement SA number 21-11599 with Utility Solutions Partners, LLC for consulting services. And with us presenting is Katie Marshall and Alex Smith.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
As Kirk said, I'm Katie Marshall. Right now, I'm currently managing the implementation of the AMI project. Utility Solutions Partners, which we call sometimes USP for short, has been a key support resource for us in our implementation of AMI, really supporting the system integrations and then the AMI functionalities between the AMI system and C2M, which is our customer information system. We've been working with them on this pretty diligently since last fall. So really what we're here to ask for this morning is just additional funds to be able to continue utilizing them as a resource as we continue implementing AMI and the development necessary to get those functionalities. We're also looking to do a couple of assessments that are related to C2M that I'm going to let Alex speak to a little more.
Sure, yeah. So we have a couple assessments that we'd like USP to provide for us, and the first one is really give us an assessment of what it would take to upgrade to the latest supported version of C2M, and with that assessment, any issues or related statuses that they could provide to us with if we decide to delay that upgrade to C2M. And that second assessment, which the first one is kind of based on, is really helping us to determine what it's going to take to move that from our on-premise-based solution to a cloud-based solution so that we can support it and upgrade it faster.
And is that solution not only for the staff side of things, but tell me a little bit about the public's ability to utilize that information?
Sure. It is mostly all on the staff side in this case. So everything that we would be doing right now is taking our existing on-premise system and then just moving it to the cloud if that's the direction we go from the assessment. All of that will allow us to quickly integrate with other solutions. So as we do further internal assessments for our customer engagement platform, which would allow the customer to better interact not only with our billing system but with any of our other systems that we have, it's an enablement project that would help with that.
I see. Okay. Gary.
So I just have a question, and this is it comes from
really being the board representative on the cybersecurity issues that the district faces. So when we move AMI into the cloud, assuming we move in that direction, how do we address the security issue on the cyber side for penetration back into district resources?
Sure, and I'm not completely the perfect person to answer this complete question, but what part of that assessment would be with anything we move to the cloud, our existing cybersecurity risks that we have, and anything that we currently do. Since this is mostly on just our side of things, our security practices really wouldn't change. The data would be hosted in the cloud at this point, but it would be still secure within Oracle's framework. So the customer really wouldn't see any difference, and how we access it really wouldn't change, other than we would have extended our firewall protections around that cloud-based infrastructure. So similar to other systems we currently have, just physically hosting it internally versus in the cloud would change.
Okay.
But from the access for the customer themselves or any of their data, it would fall under those best practices we have from a cybersecurity standpoint.
Thank you.
I don't know if that really helps completely. And Ian is online. He could probably jump in a little bit more if you could add to that at all. I didn't butcher that in any kind of way.
I think that's fine.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Not seeing any question from Dennis. So the resolution itself, do we want to put these all together?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Next item, agenda item number 15, is a resolution rejecting all bids and declaring that no bids were received for purchase of 15 kV arc-resistant metal-clad substation switchgear, bid number 21-12048, and authorizing the purchase of 15 kV arc-resistant metal-clad substation switchgear be obtained by negotiation. With us is Gary Rice.
Thank you. I'm Gary Rice. I'm a project manager in engineering project management. And as Kirk said, this is the scope of this bid, 21-12048, is to purchase a 15 kV arc-resistant metal-clad switchgear for the North Shore Lake Chelan substation. Just to bring this into perspective, this is the last of the large material purchases for that substation. Bid opening was June 23rd. 2022, and three bids were received. Two were actually an identical bid by a single bidder. And all bids exceeded the engineer's estimate by more than 15%. One bidder took minor exceptions to the bid documents related to the delivery location and progress payment terms. In anticipation of higher market prices, the engineer's estimate was increased 9.3% year over year. That's an annual escalation that we used over the OMI substation, which was a little over 2 years ago. The low bidder was $1,414,758.79, and that was Crown Technical Systems. They're also the supplier of the OMI substation, and we're the supplier for the Holly Street substation. So they're consistently giving us the lowest prices, although their price on this substation was 34.9% per annum higher than the OMI substation contract price. None of the bids were deemed responsive due to exceeding the engineer's estimate by more than 15%, and the exceptions taken in delivery and progress payment terms. The exceptions have been closely reviewed against actual project requirements, and the team's confident that we can negotiate terms on those exceptions. We do have a lessons learned on this bid. It has to do with the current bidding environment and the volatility that's manifesting in the much higher bid prices. They're very difficult to predict. The best course for future bids is to increase budget contingencies, continue to reach out to peers in the industry, and also track the most current contract prices for developing our engineering estimates. We do have engineering consultants that we rely on for this also, not just our past projects, and they're also having difficulty during this time with equipment prices. Due to time constraints and project requirements, it's recommended that the 15 kV arc-resistant metal-clad switchgear be procured by negotiation. It is believed that terms can be negotiated at a price similar to the bid prices, and the delivery schedule can be met or can occur and meet our project needs. Construction of the North Shore substation is planned for limited work this fall of 2022, and that's due to a later than expected conditional use permit procurement of that. The county is actually very busy also with many other projects, so that conditional use permit is running a little behind where we thought it would be. That would result in a more condensed fall work schedule, and we have a lot of area to open up on this due to the topography, so we thought it better not to open up that area if we couldn't get it closed back up again before wintertime occurred. Major construction is planned for early in the spring of 2023 and will continue through the summer and fall of 2023. Energization for this substation is planned for late 2023 to support long-term growth and enhance reliability in the Chelan and Manson areas. Is there any questions I could answer on this?
I think just a comment. We just concluded a WPUTA summer conference, and there were most of the PUDs in the state were in attendance. And one of the things that I heard over and over again was supply chain issues and the cost of transformers. Probably transformers first, supply chain issues second. It's a huge issue. So I don't know why you have a full head of hair still, because you got to be pulling it out.
Turning gray.
Anyway, good job just keeping the ship upright. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Great.
I would just add that this is, any of these, given the current bid environment, we are looking at which ones we can defer, and this one obviously is not one. This one will have significant customer impacts if we deferred it. So, and Gary, you're coming back with a construction contract at some point?
Yes, we are. We want to come back in August, actually, with a budget revision. We've already gone to PRC in early July, and budget revision and authorization to advertise a contract over $3 million. Our engineers' estimates have topped $3 million for this substation.
Yeah. Well, also on a side note, it's nice to see you after a couple of years or so instead of on the TV screen. So.
Yeah, it is nice to be in person here.
Well, good. I appreciate the information. Look forward to hearing how the negotiation's going, and I think that's the way to go. So,
all right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. It'd be good to take those two to a vote before we get to the next item.
Okay. So let's. Is there a motion to accept Resolution 14 and 15?
Go ahead, Dennis.
Okay. Hey, Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept items 14 and 15 as presented on the agenda.
I will second that.
Is there any further discussion on that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Item number 16 is a proposed capital budget revision, and with us is Lindsay Mons.
Good morning, Commissioners. Lindsay Mons, Business Manager in Customer Utilities. This morning, I have for you a budget revision request, as Kirk mentioned. There's two separate ones here. We'll touch on the first one, the first bullet here, which is our substation equipment replacements. So last year, we experienced the departure of two of our substation engineers. So we spent much of our year just maintaining our substations and went to budget at that time with that in mind. This spring, we were able to hire, we've been trying to recruit substation engineers, by the way, since then. Just finally this spring, we were able to bring one on staff. So he's started working through that backlog of other projects that we have. And so this first bullet here on our substation equipment replacements is to increase the budget amount for some additional projects this year on our SCADA and relay replacements at several of our substations, Miss Miller, Western, and South Shore of Chelan, as well as doing some breaker replacements up at Summit Substation to avoid those Highway 20 or Highway 2 middle of winter callouts. So this first revision request is to add $700,000 to that capital project, increasing the total to $1.2 million. In addition to that, we have, as Gary mentioned, been making progress on the North Shore substation. And one thing that we've identified the desire to do is to start working on the getaways, which are the lines that come out of the substations. So that's not part of the substation project itself, but it is a necessary component to getting that substation online next year. So this would be to start this fall, summer and fall, some of the underground work to put the conduits in and whatnot. We wouldn't pull the lines and wires until next year when the substation is ready, but this is to spend approximately $530,000 this year to start that project. We're anticipating at this point a total project cost of $3.3 million. Not sure if I have any technical experts on the phone, Chad or anybody like that, but if you have questions, I'm happy to try or at least take them away with me. I do believe there's a load growth update coming at one of the future board meetings where we can also talk about any special topics like this if you want more information.
This is good. Thank you, Lindsay. Commissioners, any further questions or discussions for Lindsay? Dennis, you look like you were going to ask a question.
No, I was just leaning forward, actually.
Okay. I was anticipating a question. So, anyway, thank you.
Commissioner McKenna, I might add, I noticed at the bottom of the slide here, letting you all know that this is not an increase in the total budget for distribution, so we are just shifting funds around this year. So, as far as total budget goes, this doesn't change that.
Thank you. Okay. Commissioners, anything else? Do I have a motion to accept this proposed motion from staff?
Mr. Chairman, I would make such a motion.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor of the proposed motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lindsay. Great job.
Good seeing you.
Thank you.
Okay. We have finished manager items, commission items. Commissioners, do we have any items to review? Gary.
Yes, I'd like to report to the board that this last week, WPUTA had its Wenatchee conference, summer conference. It was well attended by most PUDs from throughout the state. There was good information exchanged. I will tell you that those PUDs from the west side of the state were glad to get out of the rain and the gray and the gloom and come over to enjoy our nice weather over here. One thing I heard quite a bit was, oh my gosh, you know, I've been to your city 4 years ago, 5 years ago, but it has grown so much in that period of time. And I think being residents, it's maybe sometimes difficult to see the growth because it happens gradually, one hotel there, another hotel over here. And when you're back to Wenatchee after a period of time, 5 years, you really do see the growth that's occurring in our community. I was able to share with many in the PUD community that what I had heard from a local resident was that there's currently $300 million worth of proposed development within the downtown core. And as I shared that with other PUDs, I almost felt guilty because we have such a robust economy here within Chelan County. And there are other PUDs in areas where the growth isn't quite as robust. So, anyway, very, very good conference, lots of good information that I will be sharing more with staff and also with other commissioners. I'd also like to take a few moments to talk about, as president of WPUTA this year, my
priority was to have executive staff go out into the field and visit with each PUD. We are still in the process of arranging some of the meetings, but we have been successful in conducting four meetings at four state PUDs. The response from that has been overwhelmingly positive. A real appreciation for the association to come out and actually visit the PUD, see what their particular needs are, and be able to develop programs that address individual needs of PUDs across the state. So very well received, exceeding my expectations on what we would hope would be the response. Last thing I'd like to comment on is our parks, because the back to the conference, the conference hotel was the one there at Walla Walla Park. I'm not sure which hotel. Is that the Marriott? Residence Inn. Boy, I'll tell you what, the commissioners from other PUDs, very active of going out and walking. Of course, they did mention the mosquitoes, but they got out early in the morning and had a chance to take a walk and take a look at our park system. And wow, what a positive response that we as a district got back for the efforts of our parks and how beautiful they are. Just a lot of, matter of fact, one commissioner repeated himself twice by saying he wanted Waputa to sell its headquarters in Olympia and buy a building here in Wenatchee. So very positive response. Our parks are a real hit, real home run, and I just wanted to share that with everybody. But you know, Justin, I think you you get a lot of the credit for the maintenance of those parks. So thank you. You're welcome. So that's all I have.
Great, thanks, Gary. Dennis, anything from you?
No, I just appreciate Gary, your update, and you know, the fact that you're getting out to the other PUDs in the state and visiting, and that's a really good thing to do. It does build great relationships, which are always helpful.
Thank you. And I'll just piggyback on that. I received comments from my fellow commissioners about Gary's leadership and going out and visiting them with the Waputa staff and what how much that meant to them. So congratulations on that effort, Gary. Also want to share, I was one of the commissioners that took a tour of our facility, the new service center. And boy, our staff did a great job. Just answered all questions and talked about the big picture and really what it allowed us to do as a PUD was to share the importance of purpose, a purpose-driven organization that talked about enhancing the quality of it's the community through the utilities and services that it provides, and the vision of providing the best for the most for the longest. And we got to talk about that and, you know, really shed some light on the importance of a strategic plan and how the work of the commissioners working with the community on the vision that it has for its community and how that turns into a strategic plan, how allocations are made to support that strategic plan and implement it, and then how that funnels down into individual work plans for, you know, so that everybody has ownership of the direction of the organization. And it was really fun to sit there at the local winery in the evening and talk to fellow commissioners that, you know, strategic plan isn't something added that you do. A lot of them, well, I'm going to say a lot of them, but several of them look as a strategic plan as an added burden to take on. And they really talked about, you know, that this strategic plan was part of our vision and our purpose, and how it all tied together and the benefits that are coming from that, I felt really proud to be a commissioner at Chelan PUD, and the work of staff, and it was an exceptional evening. So thanks to Gary for putting all that together and the work of our staff, and I just wanted to share that. It meant a great deal to me.
Steve, if I can say one more thing, you sparked a thought. Kelly Boyd came and spoke during our conference and was talking about debt funding, but really took the time to speak to strategic planning and describe how the waterfall effect from strategic planning ends up with a budget and addresses issues of debt, and made it so clear the way that she presented it, that, you know, commissioners who had been struggling, thinking that this was a burden, approached me and said, now I get it. Now I get how the strategic plan sets the tone for everything that happens below it, including the issue of debt. So kudos to Kelly. Yeah. She did a great job.
Oh, so, she is.
There she is. Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Kelly. Nice job.
Good work.
Thanks for
Thank you very much.
Pulling her into that, because that really was really an exceptional presentation.
It was, yeah.
Well, you know that Kelly had a great high school education.
Great high school teachers.
Yes, definitely.
No, I mean, it's really true, and I appreciate what everyone is saying. And I think the other thing is it has been nice to have resources to be able to reach into the community as thoroughly as we've been able to do to find out what it is our customers really want and build that into a strategic plan and then watch that flow through the organization to fulfill that expressed desire by our customers. And it's a full circle thing, but we're really fortunate to be able to do what we're able to do. And if it wasn't for good work and careful planning and good budgeting and careful execution, we would not have the resources we have. So thanks to everyone, because it is really a significant team effort. And, you know, that's an overworn cliche, but in this case, it's one that's absolutely true. So it's a great effort. Much appreciated.
I think they're going to be calling Kelly back for more discussion and education. It was a great learning opportunity. So. All right. Well, I'm going to follow up on delegation of action items from previous board meetings.
I'll take the next two items, both of them. We don't have any follow-up items from the previous board meeting, and the new delegation of action items from today thus far. Rebecca will add Climate Commitment Act to the next board workshop agenda. And then Mike Bradshaw will determine if the administrative allowances can be included in the credits.
Okay. Wonderful. At this time, I will open it up for any additional public comment. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions after each item presented on the agenda, which we've talked about. So do we have any additional public comment? Rebecca, are we seeing anything on screen? Anybody wishing to address us?
I don't see any hands raised.
Okay. All right. Do we have any other matters of general business as may be necessary to come before the commission today? So hearing none, we are finished with our meeting for the day and the afternoon work. We will be recessing for lunch until 1 o'clock, at which time we'll be coming back for an executive session to discuss with legal counsel, agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or likely to become a party, and or legal risk as authorized by RCW 42.30.110. And we will need how much time?
I think 90 minutes.
90 minutes. There will be no votes or action taken this afternoon. So at this time, we are in recess. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Where am I at?
Go ahead.
From the start?
Start over, yeah.
Okay. We are coming out of executive session to extend for an additional 30 minutes. No votes have been taken. No decisions have been made. We are coming out of executive session. No votes were taken. No decisions made. We are adjourned.